Om Agnate Miranjasya Gyanatana Silakshaya Sakshu Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Namo Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dhanti Swaparatikam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Sri Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tininamine Namaste Sarasati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Evisesa Sundavari Paskachari Zatarine Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Dvaita Gadadhara Sivasadi Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Krishna. So this is the, of course, the last chance I have to give a lecture before I start traveling again. I'll be leaving tomorrow to go to West Virginia for about 3 days, and then I'll come back for a day, and then we'll do one recording for a television program, and then I'll be going off to India. So I'll try to speak brief so we can have chance for more questions and answers. I wanted to, the last, well, today and also Friday, there seemed to be a lot of talk about relationships. As a matter of fact, the discussion that Jagannath and Jinchamani did for the Friday program in town was on male-female relationships. And this last 3 weeks, I've had to think a little bit about similarities and differences, combinations. I've just, in the last month or so, visited about 10 different countries. I moved a little faster than normal. This time it was about 3 days or so, especially in South America and the Caribbean. And so I was noticing many interesting idiosyncratic tendencies and factors. First we say that, you can see my voice is also a little weak. First we say that sambandha in Sanskrit means, in English means relationship. The Sanskrit word is sambandha. And this sambandha or relationship is something that is existing in everything. In other words, it's not that relationships are important. They're everything. Because everything is interacting with something else in some way. Whether we're talking about organizations, societies, races, tribes, families, or just electrons and molecules and protons and neutrons. Everything is somehow interacting. Coming together, bonding, separating, seemingly performing unions, separations, reproducing, etc. So this is, of course, one of the most natural aspects of life itself. One of the ways we understand life is that there is something that's in relationship with something else. It's responding, interacting in some particular way. And so we also have been talking a lot about community and emphasizing that community means communication, it means communion, it means cooperation. And without those factors, then there's no community, it's just a pseudo-community. And so when we also look at communication, we have to look at quality communication, communication that is real sense of communication, because mutual intelligibility is at a very low ebb. Humankind's, people's ability to really to understand each other, to appreciate, especially unity with diversity. And this is becoming more and more common, of course, because diversity, again, is also such a natural aspect of reality, the secular and material as well as the spiritual. There have been evaluations of communities to try to look at why some communities last long, why some fail. And there have been analyses in trying to appreciate what's one of the most significant factors that helps a community to be successful. And one of the things the researchers are constantly finding that has a lot to do with the accommodating of diversity with unity. So there must be the variegatedness or heterogeneity, but with some factors that act as a glue or bind to allow that unity. That allows that unity. I'm sorry, that diversity to have unity. You try to just impose unity without honoring the diversity. Then it's an imposition, and it's unnatural, it's unhealthy. And diversity will still come out, but in some unhealthy way also. But when the diversity, heterogeneity is honored, appreciated, and then focused with some factors that make the unity very strong. And so unity has to be really based on things that are really inherent to the human experience. Real sense of unity has to be based on things that are not just based on the political, economic, social, psychological, and just in general, material platform. Why? Because all of these things, they're in transition, they're relative. Everything material is in change, is in flux. It's hard to have a sense of unity, deep unity, when it's dealing with things that are constantly in change, in flux. So we wanted to look at that aspect of heterogeneity with homogeneousness, meaning the appreciation of the variegatedness, which is most natural to life, but with unity. It's like even before I went to the Central and South America, I was in Australia. And so I was there having a crisis, a race relations problem. And so I was stressing how there's always differences. And we're looking at heredity and environmental factors especially. But showing how it's healthy. Differences are healthy. When there is a real common focus or common ground. And when not, then the more there are differences, the more there will be chaos and pandemonium. When there's not a common nucleus, then the differences just add to confusion. When there's a common nucleus, those differences, they bring out the variety and the variegatedness and the beauty. So we want to discuss a few things in that regard. Nothing so new, but just to refresh our minds a little bit with the significance of relationships and why some work, why some don't, why some are seemingly more progressive. Several of my young disciples, they're entering into a new experience considering, you know, matrimony. Last night, yesterday, we were having a naming ceremony where Dhruka and Rohini just brought a new baby into the world. And we're talking about the importance of protection, importance of creating an environment that will engender such higher reflections and considerations, such high reflections and experiences from the child by what kind of environment that we set into motion. And that is not just the husband and wife who are invoking and inviting this new soul. It's not just their responsibility, but it's the responsibility of the community to try to guarantee that child will be able to accelerate in her spiritual progression. So whether we're talking about relationships in the sense of something existing is always in some type of relationship. If we think of existence, we think of what is the function, what is the relationship of that to something else. As we're discussing, even looking at physics, we see that everything is in some relationship. Atoms, electrons, protons. So it's the most natural thing. So when people try to avoid relationship, or when they try to make everything so much the same, then that is unnatural. we examine the spiritual world and its interactions, we see that there is even more variegatedness. But there is the unity with that, because everything is God-centered, in that sense. You look at the Varnashram Dharma system, which has come in this present time to be sometimes considered as caste system, and as it is exploited by the Brahminical class. But originally the Varnashram Dharma system was based on trying to appreciate how different individuals have different qualities and have certain natural inherent tendencies based on the particular evolution that they are now dealing with, their unfoldment. And so the idea is that in a secular or spiritual situation, the more a person can be inspired to use those things that they have some natural inclinations for, the more they will have a greater sense of well-being themselves, the more their contribution will be of quality, and the more the environment will be affected in an auspicious way, because the environment is the aggregate of individuals and their actions and their consciousness. So one of the sad, sad problems in society today is that so many people are practically being forced to do things they have no interest in, or very little interest in. Someone is very intellectual or very philosophical, etc. One has a natural kind of propensity for teaching and for reflecting on ideas. And based on economic and sociological situations, they are sometimes forced to act in a mercantile way. We say Vaishya. So therefore, they will do that, but they will not make a serious, healthy contribution, because they will do it in terms of tolerance, just tolerating the situation. So their higher creative abilities and their spiritualness will not be able to, the spiritual qualities will not come out the same. Because they'll be so much imposed upon by what they have to do. Or someone is in a mood where they are very warrior-like, or they're very much into administration, and they're prone for politics, and they're prone for warfare, etc. And sometimes they may find themselves in type of service where they're not able to access that. So they'll have all this energy that's not coming out. And they'll be repressing it in certain ways that will cause certain imbalances. Sometimes they will strike out in ways without meaning to harm or to cause any offense, but that tendency will be there to exert that kind of energy. But as they have the ability to use that energy for administration, use that energy in protection and warfare or chivalrous activities, then they will feel so good about themselves, and that those good feelings that they will feel will then vibrate, and it will radiate and interact with those first who are in their immediate environments, and then it will affect also the general environment. Now take the opposite of that. People are uptight and disturbed, so that psychological and inner disturbance is just constantly being dropped on everybody else. That's why we find that often people are so rude and so harsh toward those who they really love the most. But they're in their immediate environment, so whatever they're having of disturbance, then it gets dropped on those who are nearest to them. And this is causing so many relationships to be on the rocks, because people are bringing so many things in from the different environments, and they are dropping them on each other. And also because, again, of not lack of appreciation of the differences. See, from a spiritual metaphysical perspective, we realize that each person is really such a composite of so many, many personalities. Because we're bringing so many desires and aspirations and phobias, etc., from previous lives. What to say of this life? Psychologically and sociologically, people realize, yes, we're all products of heredity and some environment and so many things in their maturation, unfoldments and whatnot. They realize that these things are there. But normally they don't go beyond that. Understand how the individual, the physical body, is just the house that the subtle body is in, and that the soul is there. And the subtle body It has all of these impressions from so many, many different lifetimes. As long as the soul is in a material world, it is integrating all kinds of experiences. And those experiences are leaving impressions on the subtle body. Until one goes back to the kingdom of God, then the subtle body is constantly taking the soul on to its next physical environment, next physical existence, next physical body. And so there's so much stuff in the dormant consciousness that comes out in different ways in our interactions, whether we're interacting in family or in business or other types of relationships. So one of the things we were noticing in this trip to South America and to the Caribbeans, we were visiting 3 days or so, and averaging about 5 programs a day. Normally we would start off with an early morning program at the temple. We'd leave early, 7:30 or so, and we'd try to do either a radio program, or I would meet with some of the press newspapers. And then we try to keep the TV programs if possible for afternoon, unless there was a live program. And then we'll do a university program. And then either some later public program at night, or we'll do the program at the temple, and some individual meetings with some diplomats or dignitaries. And what we were noticing, in each place we were emphasizing, looking at the multi-religious factor, the multi-ethnic factor. Like in Suriname, I was asked to address all of the religious leaders of different traditions and to help them in being able to apply their spirituality in such a way to improve on nation building. Because the spiritual life is just something that people do on Fridays, do on Saturdays, do on Sundays, then it is theoretical. If it doesn't improve on the quality of life, and not only just for that individual, because again, everything is in relationship. So to make that person better, or give that individual more insight, so that he or she is then able to distribute and share it. So the tendency is, again, so much sovereign considerations, sectarian, etc. So people into their different religions, and even struggling even within their own traditions with other branches of the same tradition. So we talked about these things and about interfaith. Explain how there cannot be a real sense of inner faith if there's not faith. So many people have no faith, even though they're involved in systems, you know, they're involved mechanically. And there cannot be any deep connections if there's not deep inner understanding, inner experience, based on that tradition. And when that's there, then there's a natural meeting and appreciation. A chastity can still be there, but an appreciation based on how that unity, how that diversity connects and engenders unity, because one may use different rituals, different words, different symbols, but if deep levels of consciousness are accessed, then certain experiences and realizations will be there. That'll be common. And so we're also, because each place has so much variegatedness, then there's always, you know, conflict. Like in Suriname, it's interesting that about 40% of the population is Hindustan descent, and about 40% or so is African descent, and then Japanese and Indonesians, etc., some Chinese. And so in one of the lectures I was explaining, we were looking at the race factor, and I was just saying how now the audience of about maybe 400 or 500 people, and I was just discussing how until you open your mouth, I said, even myself, until I open my mouth, you would not know exactly where I'm from. So, especially in your cases, so because you could be from northern India, from southern India, you could have been from this part of India, you could be from this part of Africa, you could be Nigerian, you could be Ghanaian, you could be Sierra Leonean, you could be Jamaican, you could be Trinidadian. So when you open your mouth and I hear Dutch, then I know it's just Suriname. Because they're all speaking that, whether they were Chinese descent or Japanese rather, or African, or Indian. And so we're discussing how so many things are based on the environment. And as we look at environment, we can change consciousness by also changing environment, or change environment by changing consciousness. That even if we change, we still should not try to force others to think the same way that we do. We should appreciate those things that are coming. So this is one of the issues we wanted to talk on, just briefly, and then have some questions and discourse, and we'll try to answer as best as possible. So now there's a lot of attention to male-female relationships, a lot of books being written on these issues, and some special books being written about how there are unique differences. One of the famous books is that when men are from Mars and women are from Venus. I haven't read the book, but I understand the conception. Basic conception is that just as if you are meeting someone from what you understood is a very distinct culture, a very distinct part of the world, even if you were meeting someone from a different planet, you would automatically appreciate that there are some serious differences. Be somewhat fascinated by the differences as you check in with each other and appreciate certain things and compare certain things. And you'll be also very sensitive in how you interact with that person because you know that there's certain things that are different based on his or her background. There are certain idiosyncratic tendencies, certain cultural differences, certain differences in perception. And by appreciating that, then there would be such beauty in the relationship because there would be a fascination about the differences and a chance to also to check in on with some similarities, etc. The relationship would be healthy. And then when there was some miscuing, you can easily be able to adjust because you realize that you're from different backgrounds. And the different things are evaluated, perceived differently. And those who travel around a lot, sometimes you notice that. Even those who are conscious, who are very conscious about diversity. It's like when I was visiting Mexico, because I was, moving so fast, I had to constantly remind myself where I was so that I could tune in to the mentality of the people. Because the idea is not just to speak something or not just to perform, but it's to communicate, it's to serve. So you serve based on how you're understanding, the field of activities. So when I was in Mexico, it reminded me, Mexicans, they're very festive. They're very communal. They do not have, except when they come to America, they get a little changed. They don't have quite so much of this stratification based on, economic situations. Like in many parts of the world, you very rarely find the peasants or the impoverished of those who have wealth, etc. Of course, the super rich, they have it there also, but in general, you find that people, especially when it comes to worship, they're very comfortable and such. Some places not. It's quite a difference. The places that's a major factor. Especially people who've just come new into wealth, they surely want to let everybody know they have the wealth and they want to keep some distance to show what they have, in that sense. And so I had to notice to deal with that was I was dealing with the devotees as well as the public. And I also noticed, like in Trinidad, I was noticing how, because my lectures changed in Trinidad, you listen to the tapes, you see every 5 minutes I have the devotees laughing. But speaking philosophy and very, emphatically. But there is so much grasping, as there are analogies, as there are stories, as there is that excitement based on how the philosophy is used, how it's compared, in other situations. And as we move into, just like, some people, they study books on etiquette and how to function in this environment, that environment, etc. So the idea is how to communicate in the environment and how to be relevant. So a spiritualist always wants to serve, and so in serving, you want to be as relevant as possible, to appreciate the diversity, while at the same time reminding yourself that everybody is similar in the sense that the soul is the same, whether in a man, a woman, a child, whether in Indian, African, European, American, Asian, it's the same. So by having that understanding, then we honor the diversity in a healthy way while not getting distracted about where the real, you know, unity lies. It's like some people, they have this thing, well, they say, well, I don't see any race. And you immediately know. The nonsense person. Because they are different, you know, races, different tribes, different moods. The idea is that I see it, and I appreciate it, and I try to deal with it and recognize it in such a way. It doesn't give me a problem that people are different. People say, I see no race, I see no this, I see no that. Then we understand that they have a big problem because they need to see. The problem because they're blind. They need to open up and see the beauty of heterogeneity. And so, one of the issues is the issue with the masculine and feminine gender. But before we address that, we look just a little closer. Just like our movement at one time was having a lot of trouble in India. We were sending leaders over one after another, and they were having trouble. The movement had a lot of trouble at first in South America. Because first, in general, as Americans, we're not so sensitive to other cultures. And you'll notice that when you go to Europe, because countries are closer, so people are a little more sensitive. More languages are being spoken, people are a little more sensitive. But the tendency in America is that the idea is you come to America and you speak English. If you can't, you learn it fast, or why are you here? You know, the mood is you come to America and you become American. Sometimes people can identify an American in any other country right away because you see their mood. Huh? Especially the tourists, they have their camera. They're looking at everybody, you know, like they're looking into zoos. And speaking a little bit, and being a little insensitive to some of people's moods and whatnot. Because, I mean, that's just the present state of history right now. That when a power is dominant, and the tendency is that history becomes, of course, his story, based on whatever the dominant, usually masculine group is in charge. So they write history according to their spirit, you know, their mood, what's auspicious for glorifying themselves or for enhancing their own situation. And so that tendency is there. And so we're having trouble because the tendency was that, as Americans, we would go to Latin America, South America. And in trying to preach, we were just preaching, yes, philosophy was there. We're minimizing the fact that people have different particular tendencies. And so it's like some time back last year, one of my colleagues was visiting me in Africa. And he was just saying how he's in charge of a program in Japan and in a few of the other Asian countries, Oriental countries. And so he was saying how it's like total opposite mentality of the people. He was explaining how in Japan, in the temple there, this is a spiritual environment, but still shows you how differences are there because we bring these things into the environment. He said there can be a group of devotees sitting in a room for hours and hours and hours, and not even speak to each other. And he said, at first he was having problems because when he first came to the country, he was always asking the devotees how they're doing. And he noticed they would feel sometimes nervous because sometimes he then began to notice just coming on somebody how they're doing, sometimes it's like you're saying that there's something wrong. So they feel a little bit nervous. And he was noticing how he's visiting at the temple in Africa, how there's so much of this discourse going on. Well, you notice with language, you notice with also space. Because you watch people from different environments, you see how they have a different conception of space. See, people from very crowded countries, you notice how they're much more comfortable in being together close. Because they're used to that. Used to that on the buses, at the public places, in their families. They can have, 20 people living in one little room. As long as they have a little place where they can put their mat down, they're okay. And then you see other people that they have to even have one roommate. They climb the walls. they want to have something completely different, you know, because they're just not into dealing too much in environments like that. Or you notice how in some cultures people, as they talk, they touch more. And so, if they're not touching, they feel, you're not touching them, they feel maybe something's wrong. You're talking, they're touching you, and you're not touching anything. What's happening? These things are always kind of curious and interesting to me because, you know, the sannyasi, you don't touch so much. And at the same time, you know, some places that's very important. And you know, in some places it sends one signal and it sends another signal in a different way. Just like in another example, in most places in Africa, when you're with, royalty, or even in the general environment, you shake you move up to the person who's most senior. In most places, you come and you approach the senior person first, because you want to let that person know, I know you're the boss here, I know you're the ogo, I know you're the chief, I know you're the important one, and therefore you play into the ego. But you know, that's somewhat individualistic kind of mentality, or materialistic. But in other environments, there's a difference in the sense that you work yourself up to the most important person. And so in one environment, that may be the right thing, in another environment, it could be, it gets sent off, you know, no different signal. Like I noticed in Mexico, how as we were moving in some circles, as people meet, like in the French countries also, and the tendency is to shake hands, they kiss each other on both cheeks. Of course, in a lot of places, you meet somebody and they start kissing on you, and they go, hold a minute now. You know, what is this all about? But then you realize that different environments are different. And so, in order to communicate to you, recognize that you appreciate it for the value that it has without becoming distracted in that sense. So one of the issues that's, you know, it's very dominant, recognizing how men and women actually think differently and appreciating those differences. You know, so many marriages, most marriages are failing, doesn't matter what part of the world. Most relationships are in chaos. Or people are wondering why they don't have relationships. In some cases, it's also due to some relationships that were there that failed. In some cases, it's just due to some other factors. That Prince Charming or that great queen just hasn't appeared yet. It won't be long. So, wonderful things, sometimes it takes a little while to wait for. Or it's already, or he or she has already appeared. You just haven't been able to appreciate it. If you bring it out a little more, then you appreciate the great gem, that you have. So, because, again, of the factor of reincarnation, we see that we're all having, you know, so much feminine and masculine energy. No person is just distinctly one thing or the other. And we have many different impressions in different lives that we brought based on the genders that we were in. But our dominant personality is of a certain nature. And so the tendency is, of course, is that the masculine gender needs to feel that it's important, and that's natural. Masculine gender is quick to think about how to fix something, how to resolve something. While the feminine gender will find just as much appreciation, or even more, in just being able to connect, just being able to discuss, just being able to feel appreciated. While the masculine gender, the macho situation is often that one involves themselves and then they retreat. And so we see that sometimes the signals are not being so clear. The man is needing his space, and just his tendency, that's part of the masculine gender in most cases, needs a certain space at a certain time to reflect. And where the cases where woman is having a problem and she distinctly needs to connect, needs to talk, needs to discuss, needs to know somebody's there and want somebody there, physically there as well as psychologically appreciated. Well, the man may just feel, well, the problem that he's having, he needs to have space to process it and then to jump back into the fight or jump back into the arena in a certain way. And so, two people dealing with the same situation, of different genders will process it differently. And if it's not appreciated, then it can create a lot of problems. As we know how so many times these little things, they show greater affection than the big things that we do. But the little things show that, especially the feminine aspect will appreciate this, it shows that a woman is really important in your life. That so much of your life is based on appreciating. And when such little things are not done, then it can be almost more like a performance of such. And because by our natural constitutional position, we're always looking for love, to receive it, and to give it. But then the material environment makes everybody kind of shut down. Because the tendency is, if I give love, will it really be accepted? Will it really be appreciated? Will there be proper reciprocation? And in most cases, not. Because in most cases, people do not realize that they have to recondition themselves to be able to sufficiently love. Because even so conditioned to be self-centered, we even become so conditioned in seeing others as an extension of ourselves, or looking more at what we can get out of something than what we can share and what we can put in. Many people go for years and years, and they think that they're in love, then one day they find out, I don't know this person. Huh? They think they're in love, and after a while, the infatuation wears down. And, you know, everything is uncovered. And then they're confused. Because they were sometimes very much in love with what the person was saying or doing for them. They were happy about that. And it was still so much based on what they were receiving rather than what they were giving and sharing. And in so many cases, it's so difficult. Because in order to really do something very, very strong and securely, we need to understand it theoretically. We need to see it and then to be able to learn from it, imitate it, apply it, etc. But so many times people don't see it. They just see this Hollywood stuff. And they jump into relationships like that. They wonder, hey, why is it not working? It worked on TV for 35 minutes. And after the cameras were off, they were fighting also. So they're from, you know, broken, you know, relationships. You wonder, you know, why it's not quite like that. Like sometimes something is sold in the stores and it's while it's in the window. You know, they make it shine very nice. They put special lights on it. And then you become so captivated by it. And once you get it, you wonder, oh, it's not quite the same. It's the same thing. But it's not quite, because all those extra flourishings were there, in that sense. And so when we, before we kind of sort of own each other, then there's a difference in sometimes how we, you know, how we relate. And then once there's that bond, everything is more official and whatnot. Sometimes there's a big shift in consciousness, activity, what we experience. But if we are honoring those differences, whether it's age or race or gender, it's like now there's a big problem because the youth, we were just talking about that upstairs today, how our, you know, our younger generation, there's a big difference. Then, well, I'm about their age, but there's a big difference in some of your age and their age and their experiences. In a sense that they have come into the world at a time that the big lie has become obvious. They've come at a time from the major programs that's coming across the media, the major issues on the newspapers, is you thought it was like this, but it's really like this. There come at a time where it's become very much common to, you know, not trust leaders. I mean, you know, if you look at what's happening now, the top leaders in America, they're just being evaluated now and assessed for great, you know, deviations. You go from one country to the next and you see that some of the top people, they're in office, they're supposed to be the examples, supposed to have a sense of, you know, principle-centered, being principle-centered, and it's one of the greatest talks is, you know, to what degree they're involved in this scandal or not. And they're at a time when they see that the generations before them has actually, you know, made the planet endangered. It polluted the whole atmosphere. We have had so much interest in technology and science and have not looked at some of the implications, the ramifications that's involved and these things with all the human face involved. At a time when they are growing up and they're seeing problems of ethnicity every place. And so they come into the world, as they're growing, they come into the world with its strong, you know, they're scrutinizing things very deeply. And they're having the consciousness of being able to see through things a lot easier because their basic experiences in their maturation is that there's always something behind whatever this thing is, something behind. And that is healthy in one sense because it allows people to not to just take things for granted. But for many it's unhealthy because then they become, what do you call it, anarchists. They don't see, you know, why have faith in this and that? You see the politicians doing like this, religious leaders doing like this. You hear about this cardinal, you hear about this monk, you hear about this politician. A time when there's more and more discussion now about incest and child abuse, and it's supposed to be very reverential, you know, toward the teacher. When I hear so many teachers abusing their students, they're supposed to be respectful toward the politicians when they are hearing that embezzling money, engaged in illicit activities, and often the exact things he's telling other people to do, he's doing it, you know, himself, and even worse. And so, how are they supposed to feel, you know, so excited? At a time when they are learning in school and they just finished learning that the power of nuclear war, biological weaponry, you know, chemical weaponry. There have been surveys done in some schools in the Midwest with children, you know, around the age of 11, 12 years old. And it was shocking, some of the reports were shocking, that in some cases almost 40% of them felt that they wouldn't live, you know, past 35 years old, 32 years old, of the violence that they're hearing about, the neighborhoods, or they're hearing about the status, the state that the world is in. So imagine that kind of mentality as we trying to deal with our children, or trying to deal, you know, with the youth, of the great benefits in that, and also some of the downside, why it's the need for us to walk our talk a little more. They can feel no more secure. You see the way that people are striking out in so many ways, because they're feeling that the environment is not supportive, the environment is not secure, the environment is not, you know, loving. So why should they try to, you know, be loving when they're not receiving love, and the environment is, you know, not that same. Not of the same way. So, this then, as we understand that, then we also understand again better ways to communicate, because then we honor the differences, we honor the diversity, and then see how to make the connections, you know, with the unity. Some of us may think, well, of course, we understood that. We coming from this, you know, the 60s and being active in this way, that way. But it's different. The big difference. Because there was not to the degree of disappointments that now the kids are having to face. We didn't have to have that same fear of going, well, maybe later, of weapons in the school systems. You know, not as much. You know, people had weapons, but nothing like this. You didn't have to have the same, not quite as much fear about the drug problem. But now it's there. And so all of this, it also has ability to shut down the loving energy, as people can find avenues where they can express that. Excuse me. I mean, just look at the gang factor. But he has so many gangs. The gang is a certain type of family, it's community. And if you're not having it at school, you're not having it at home, you're not having it in the church, you're not having it in the mosque, you're not having it in the cathedral, very natural tendency to bond together and to have some type of allegiance is missing, and therefore one will look for ways to access that. So many people, then they take shelter of the gangs because that becomes their family. It's necessary to defend each other's honor. And so they're not having that in the family. They don't feel so enlightened to defend in their family members because they see so much deviations. They see so much duplicity. So they create this artificial situation to be able to get the shakti or the reinforcement that comes out of that. And when they have stronger sense of community, again, honoring the unity with the diversity, people don't have to cultivate artificial means. Whether it's, you know, going to special country clubs and trying to form alliances or certain secret societies or whatever. But that tendency is there that people need to feel important, need to feel cared for, need to feel that they actually count, and that there's some, you know, value and some worth, you know, to their particular lives. So, you know, this summarizes, there's a few things to reflect on. That very much it is important that we recognize that there are differences. Differences in gender, differences in importance of the world that we're from, differences in what tribe, differences in what race, differences in even how we hear different things. Like the little discussion we had now, so we've heard it differently, people heard it differently. Certain things are more significant, certain things are more relevant for one person than another person. And that's wonderful. Because then so much comes out of just one little involvement, one little interaction, one little discussion, and one little presentation. And the idea is to, what is said, for it to be used according to how the person feels comfortable, and being able to take something out of that and to be able to, you know, be able to use it. And then as we look at the world and we see that so many things are fragmenting, so much based on these differences, every place. It's fragmentation, you know, based on the differences. And that makes the global community, as well as the national community, it makes it very much endangered. Because by technology and by science, we're all so much connected even more. And so therefore what we do, what one person does, what one group does, one part of the world does, it naturally will automatically have so much an effect on other places. So we all have a duty, a responsibility to, of course, to do our part by meeting the environment and, again, for the society. And so we're looking at this natural situation, whether we're looking at it from a Varnashram Dharma perspective, people have particular tendencies, and if they can be able to function based on those tendencies, be encouraged based on that, then they will be inspired. The contributions will be more significant to society. And that contribution will complement someone else who's also inspired. And as we particularly look at relationships, because the family unit, it's a microcosm, you know, of the whole world. And so if we're not able to somehow to get our families together stronger,